They are knocking down the house next to where I live. Like, it is getting flattened right now. And it is a fascinating thing to watch this go down. And, like, literally, the home has been reduced from a really lovely home next, like, literally next door to us to a basement. And then they're going to rebuild. They're going to build it new. And these are neighbors. They're really great neighbors. Although Charles and Marcy, I think, would be better neighbors. We've been talking about them moving in, maybe, and we'll build like a joint lot compound with a basketball court, skate park, and a command center for common purpose. It's just fascinating to watch this whole process of taking down a structure and going to build it back up in a new way. And there's clearly a metaphor there for what's going on in our country and our democracy right now. We need to take it down, take it apart and rebuild it. This election is part of the taking apart and putting into place new structures. And I would say even 2018 was a real big part of that as well. We're making progress, but we are far, far, far to go. Well, welcome everybody. This is David. It's Tuesday morning. This is the Three Things for Today podcast. Myself and Charles Douglas. I don't know, Charles is probably at some donut shop. He'll call in shortly here. I'm walking up a hill right now, which is why I'm breathing a little bit heavier, but it's a beautiful day. And this weather, which we've had for really about a month almost, has been something else. It's been a gift to us in the midst of this scary, unsettling, completely upending world that we live in. But the chance to just sit outside or to walk outside has been such a privilege to be able to do that. I know that millions of people in the United States and billions around the world don't have that ability to do that. All right, looks like Charles has got his donuts. He's calling in now. What kind of donut did you get?
I don't have any donuts. I do want to talk to you about talking about walking. I think we should find something else. You know, I have a suggestion actually. You know, while you're out walking, I bet there's some birders out there that would love for you to talk about birds.
Okay. I'm down for that. There's two chairs right next to me on the grass, and they have the sign free on them. You know, they're free for anybody.
Yeah.
So it's cool. It's like, you know, maybe I'll check that out. We'll take a little break here. Okay, I'll check out. I'll tell you about birds I see. You don't know what you just opened up. Okay, but that's fine.
We got to use what do they call them? Binox? Or no, what's the there's a term for them.
Binoculars?
Binos or something? No, there's a shorthand for them. We got to ask our community what the shorthand for binoculars are.
Yeah, we got plenty of people in common purpose that are into birding.
Totally. So while you're walking, they're listening and they're like, hey, that's a red-tailed, I shouldn't even try, but you know, they can hear the chirps in the background.
Yeah, I might get like a birding little book and just bring it along with me so that I can get some information on what I'm looking at.
Now you're talking. Great.
Yeah, this is a new lane of activity for common purpose right here, okay?
That's right. Hey, you know what? Actually, that would actually be a thing, man. The walking that we do in neighborhoods, you do see a lot of birds and you see a lot of wildlife that we're not used to seeing in Seattle. So that's like a whole part of the canvassing experience.
It sure is. Yeah. Yeah. Like there are like per capita dogs in Seattle, probably, I'm just making this up, but let's just imagine if it's one for every 10 households. Just making this up. But like anywhere else,
Seattle, there's more dogs than children in Seattle, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, but there's definitely more dogs where I've been to the places I've been. There just seems to be more dogs there. And I was writing a little paragraph for this thing at the UW. I was writing a paragraph about what I've been doing with my time this year because I'm officially on leave from the UW, so I have to report in on what I'm doing. And I've been to Kentucky, Iowa, South Carolina, Nevada, Idaho this year as part of Common Purpose. I'm serious, in the last, not this calendar year, but since summer last year. You know, we get around a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do.
We got to get out there, man. I am getting ready to go.
the Wisconsin team has been pretty active recently, and everything, all the calls and postcards and stuff just is making people want to get out and knock on doors. More and more. We're ready to go, man.
I'm deciding right here and now, mark this moment, that I'm switching my political allegiances and I'm joining the Reopen America crowd. Okay. And I am going to, I'm going to be like protesting at state capitals. All right. And,
but in your car, you're going to stay in your car while you do it, right?
Yeah.
Coronavirus, yeah. Obviously.
Sure. Yeah.
So how about, let's make the thing number one.
Okay.
This thing number one for me got me excited. So my team's been calling for the May 12th election, the special election in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Conservative district, not a huge chance of winning. But a big chance to make a statement to bring out more folks on our side, Democratic voters and Republican voters that would swing our way, and just show closer margin, even if we don't win. And just like seeing the team go and hearing about how many calls that they've made. And talking about getting back out in the field is really exciting to me. Just talking about it has gotten me to the point where I'm really looking at dates, like specific dates that I want us to travel. And some of those are like nice to have dates. And some of the dates are like, we're going to go no matter what during this time. So that's what's got me. That's one of the things that got me fired up.
Totally. I'm looking up the Wisconsin 7th right now district. I know it's in Western Wisconsin.
Yes. I even think it's Northwestern, but the team made over 1,000 calls over the 2 days that were like,
oh my gosh,
the weekends of action. I mean, over 1,000 calls. That's not counting postcards that have been done, and numbers are still rolling in. So we're tearing it up.
Yeah. Okay. I know what I'm going to do for thing two, but I'll stay on this for a second. It's going to be related to this, but I'll stay on this. Looking at that district in Wisconsin 7, it's really large. You know, like they have these districts that are really small geographically when you're talking about urban areas. And then enormous districts geographically when you're talking about rural areas. And it is a really large district. It's like, it's almost half the state geographically.
Right.
And it's a Republican lean district. I think the lean is like 7 or 8 points, which means that if the national popular views are like 50-50 in the country, hypothetically, then this district would be 7 percentage points more Republican. And it's been represented by a Republican for a while. So here, so what we're doing here is we're trying to make a statement, as you said, by making it at least closer than that. But also we get the chance to work on our get out the vote activities, our processes, our protocols.
Right. And this one is, this is only 2 weeks away. And we tried some stuff out during the primary election in Wisconsin. And now we're perfecting it. So some of the team communication that's going on, some of the team to central CP kind of working relationship is these are things that we're working on now. There's just a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of good stuff coming out of this. And to your point, and to Lou Friedman's point, Friedland. I got it this time, right? Friedland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your friend and professor that we spoke to a couple weeks ago, he reminded me that it was not an election that we think that we can win, but it's one that we feel like we can make some kind of progress in it. So don't look to this election for a trend. Just use it for mobilization in general. And that's what we're doing. So that's the first thing. I'm fired up about that. I'm excited. I want to get back out there, man.
So when you're talking to the Wisconsin team of on this point of getting out there, because I am definitely feeling the energy to be out there. I'm not saying now, today, but I'm looking down the horizon and I'm thinking yeah. What is a nugget, just one, why you're I've got to get out there. I want to get out there. I am fired up. I'm needing this. I'm wanting this.
Go ahead.
Okay. For me, it's the putting into motion the sense of being connected to all of these entities around the country. When we show up in an Iowa or South Carolina recently, when we travel to see the candidates, or in a Kentucky or an Idaho or a Wisconsin or a Florida, places that I've been fortunate to work with in Common Purpose, I just feel more connected to our democracy with everybody. I feel part of the broader fabric that is this country. And I am definitely missing that in this COVID-19 space. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not kind of in the trenches on the ground with the folks that are doing the hardest work for the same causes that we care about. There's definitely some of that for me. The other part is the team. Oh my gosh, when we're out there and we're knocking on doors, and we're coming together and we're comparing notes, we're going back at again. The push that you see people exhibit, them having these boundaries that they arrived with, and then pushing past those things, and then discovering this new level of themselves. It's just really, it's inspiring, and it's this loop of inspiration that flows around the team. And most of these folks are people that, they shouldn't be having revelations about themselves at this point in their lives. According to popular belief, right? These are people that are I know who I am. And, they've done these great things in their lives, and they're mature and experienced. And they go out there and they have these formative, reformative experiences again. And it's just really cool to see that happen, while you're experiencing it too.
It is. I'm consistently struck by how meaningful the work is in teams and out in the field and as community and just for our democracy, the depth of meaning it has for people, myself included. But it's just, to me, it started as a task, as a thing to do, right? And it's become something that's deeply meaningful for people in a way that is really awesome.
Yeah. So I think one of the on a more serious note, like a tactical note, look for some sort of communication at some point where David and I say we are going here, or these teams are traveling now, or something like that, and there's this really small window. It's probably going to be a few conversations that we have where we flip the green light on and we say, go, we're going to go to these states, or we're going to this one state or something like that. And we got to do it now. And here's the window. And if you're willing to go, then cool. If you can't, that's fine. But we're going to go look for that in the future. Cause we are all this pent up energy. You know, we're probably going to just go.
Yeah. Yep, we will. I know. I can't wait. All right. Number two, for me is, I realized something Friday. We were doing, Maria and I were doing a Zoom call with some folks from the Olympia Indivisible. They were wanting to bring a lot of their folks to our remote work, to our advocacy push, and also to our four lanes of remote work. As we were talking to them, they were going to bring this information to their entire Olympia Indivisible like on Sunday night. And so we were talking to them Friday, so they would have the information. And we were talking to them, and I realized that Democrats / progressives actually have the upper hand on voting practices right now. And the thing is that the psychology of voting by mail and voting in person early and to figuring out creative ways to respond to COVID-19, creative small d democratic ways to respond to COVID-19 are all within the kind of worldview of where Democrats have been, because we've been fighting against voter suppression. We have been trying various ways. We've been creative for the last many decades as conservatives have put up barrier after barrier. In this moment,
that's great.
In this moment, we start from a position of greater creativity, greater confidence, greater drive. We are not fighting against COVID-19 here. We are saying, look, this is what the reality is. We're going to be creative enough to win in this space.
That's such an interesting point.
Yeah. And I'm almost done here, and I'll get your full response. Conservatives are fighting against the changes that we're talking about politically for voting. They're like, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. And when you're fighting against something, you are not being creative. You are actually digging in your heels. You are saying no. And so when inevitably we get there, because we're going to have vote by mail in a lot of states, and we're going to have more early voting in a lot of states, not all of them, but in a lot of them, when inevitably that happens, progressives will already be like 3 miles down the lane, and conservatives will just be at the starting blocks. All right. So I'm feeling like we are in an advantage in a way that we haven't been in a long time on voting, just voting.
Yeah, it's interesting. So coronavirus is just, you know, to us, it's just like another voting barrier to overcome. You know, we've exercised that muscle over and over again, and it didn't come from the Republicans, but it you know, impacts us in the same way. And so we're used to these new challenges, and having them in high number.
Right.
Over years and generations, actually, let's be honest, generations, some of the playbooks that we're using now were created by generations before us. So yeah, you're right. The muscle memory's there, the energy and the spirit to keep fighting through that kind of thing is there. You know, all of those black people that lined up in Milwaukee, and risked their lives. Yep. You know, they were like, you know, in a long lineage of people who have risked their lives to vote. So, you know, that's, you bring it on, right? Or, I mean, not to make light of it, but, you know, we're ready for this shit, and we're more ready than they are.
Yeah, I really think that's true. And and like, you know, you, we, their systems work in ways in which they replicate themselves through patterns that are in place and also through just traditions. Like there are traditions that get just like, well, this is the way we do it. We do this and we're ready to do it every year. Like we do Halloween this way, whatever. Well, the tradition right now in the voting space, the traditions that are in the voting spaces or the practices that are in the voting spaces are Democrats and progressives have been working for over 100 years to overcome voting barriers. And conservatives have been working for over 100 years to enact those and to resist them, to those barriers, to resist voting, to enact barriers. So now you've got like the ultimate electoral barrier that, I don't know if it's ultimate, but it's a new one, a new voting barrier. And Democrats, like you're saying, or people of color are just like, fuck, I've been doing this forever. We'll take care of this too. Right.
Yeah. And the barrier doesn't discriminate and it doesn't know party. And so, you know, you can't fight you can't fight it like it's a political enemy. This is a regular voting barrier and they're not ready for it. That's a really interesting point. And I think you mentioned this in your lecture last night too, when you were talking about
how
you could win.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about it in my upcoming voting rights lectures, this posture I'm talking about, this starting point, this starting from a reality of like we know how to do this. We do. We need to innovate again, but we know how to do this. I mean, I think of it in sports, and I'll go with like one that we don't use too much, but like in the best long distance runners in the world are Kenyans. Okay. They're incredible. Mm-hmm. Sure. They win marathons. They win all the long distance races in the Olympics and everything. And so, you know, they have a tradition, a practice, a set of cultural norms that produce that kind of excellence in long distance running. That's incredible. And maybe their food eating patterns and their lifestyles all facilitate this. Well, that makes it not for sure that they're going to always win, but more likely they start from a better position, right? And that's right. Where we start on this with voting.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good, hopeful point there, man. I like that a lot. Okay. What's thing number three?
Okay. So thing number three is, I got another metaphor. This is surprising.
Is it another sports one or are we doing something?
No. Well, no, abstractly, it has athletic components to it, but it's not a sports one. You and I, we really enjoy, and a lot of our colleagues do, and this has been great for Common Purpose, but we really enjoy the process of creating and problem solving and thinking about how to go around a barrier. And we spent a fair amount of time adjusting, that was the word we were using, or pivoting, our work to deal with the new COVID-19 space. And I really feel now on our advocacy work and our remote work and our on-the-ground work that's going to come back, that our lanes of field work are very, very clear, all right? They're really clear. There's this advocacy work to expand the voting arena that we will take well beyond 2020. Into 2021 and beyond, advocacy work. Then there's these remote four lanes, some around absentee voting, some around letter writing, some around Washington-based work, and some that are really partner organization specific. We have those lanes. And then we have our own on-the-ground work that we will be doing in these states. So what I feel like as one of the folks kind of with you and driving us through this process is that we have shifted. And I felt this a couple of weeks ago, but now it feels really good. Like the muscle memory feels really good now. We've shifted from like building this new bike to riding this bike. All right. And the riding the bike, oh man, I am digging it. I am really digging it. And that clarity for us also allows other organizations and entities to, with great clarity, interact with us. And use our services, okay? Because we're very clear about this is what we can deliver. and they can say yes or no, and they know exactly what they're going to get. So I just really feel like the bike is rolling now, and I can see this bike riding in this capacity running through the election. We've got the advocacy work, we got the remote work, and we got the on the ground work. I can see this bike ride all the way now.
Yeah, we don't lose this. Like we don't lose the ability to ride the bike. You know, maybe we just you know, we got a bike plus like a trailer we're pulling or something, or we got, you know, a tandem bike, you know, riding tandem or something like that, you know, but we don't replace this remote work with in-person work when we can do it again. We just add it on. We add the in-person back on, and now we're riding two bikes or two people to a bike or something like that. We are, I'm like destroying your metaphor here, but.
No, it's good. It's good.
We're riding. We're doing a lot of bike riding. Is what we're doing. That's what we're doing. Yeah, and it's like a new. It's a new part of our organization that is going to make us more effective. It's going to make it really effective and meaningful when we're in person and we're knocking on doors in these states. And then when our volunteers come home, they're going to be able to stay active in those states and make phone calls through mechanisms that we've set up and do postcarding still. And they'll just do both. And they'll feel even more engaged in these elections, plugged into our local partners and like their time is meaningful.
Yeah. So we were on, I have two kind of recent conversations that speak to this. Actually several, but I'll take two. One was on Sunday when we were, Anita Vernacross, one of the main team leads for us, and I were talking to Madeline Shiley, who's the regional organizing director for the Sarah Gideon for Senate campaign. And I said to her, so, you know, one of our major lanes of remote field work is helping voters to get absentee ballots and then helping them to return them, like making phone calls or postcards for this. And she goes, that's great, because that's like all we're doing right now. That's all we're doing. And I said, okay, great. Are you doing it for the primary, which is upcoming, or are you doing it for November? And she said, well, we're doing it for the primary because absentee ballots cannot be requested for an election until 90 days or shorter to the election. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I said, okay, so 90 days, and I looked on the calendar, and 90 days on the calendar, if you work backwards from the election, is you go back through October, through September, and August. So it's right at the beginning of August. Mm-hmm. And I said, so like August 3rd, is when you can start to request absentee ballots. She said, yep. And I said, then we will deliver a body of people that will be on the phone to people in Maine to support that from starting then for sure. You can bank on us. And she just like got this huge, she started clapping. She's like, oh my God, that is so awesome. Yeah. And I said, you can count on it. We will execute. We will be there for sure. And I said, check that box. We're going to be there. And she's like, that means so much. Because now I know if you're going to come with the size of your organization, she goes, I know that I can have other people doing other things. I'm like, yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about, of them being able to use us more effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great, man. That's really, to imagine like her feeling. you're gonna get this help that's gonna come out of nowhere, and we can pretty much guarantee it. That's a game changer for their fall strategy.
Totally. And then I had another conversation just before this podcast. Sorry, where somebody who's been a big supporter of us has been really involved in us, but she always also is kind of like looking how we can get better, and she's got great suggestions all the time. And she said, look, I've seen you talk about common purpose three or four times over the last 6 months. And she said, I think that it is more powerful today, the work you're doing, than it was even months ago. And I was on board months ago. She said, but your remote work, the work you've developed has made your organization even stronger. And I was like, that's what we hope for, right? That's what we hope for.
Yeah, that's right. So Daniel just sent... Speaking of remote work, you just texted in the number for the advocacy initiative, the new number of contacts, 9,000 are not yet 9,792 contacts.
Wow.
That's almost 10,000 contacts to 27 states, to elected officials and election officials, to advocate for mail-in ballots and an extended voting period. That's huge.
Yeah. Hey, can you share that? Tell us about the email. We'll finish with this. The email that Daniel forwarded from somebody who had contacted the Wisconsin election official.
It was an email reply to one of our volunteers, and it was kind of a, hey, yeah, thanks for your asking us about this. We're going to add it to the number. Oh, hey, by the way, which organization are you emailing from? We're getting a lot of communications that are phrased in the same way, and it's our talking points. It's our script. It's our script that people are copying and pasting into their emails and are sending it in. So to get that email, it is a data point that adds validity to the entire strategy, which is about volume and pressure, like you said before. And to have somebody ask who we are because we're getting a lot of these, I think think about a state like Wisconsin, right? It's a battleground state. And then think about the position of this person. Like, they should be receiving a lot of these from different places. They should be. If they're getting enough to recognize the pattern of our emails, what that does for us is it gives us a bar and it tells us what a lot is. It tells us what a lot of pressure is. So what we can do now is we can dig back through our response numbers and go, hey, it took this many contacts for the Wisconsin to feel like it was a lot. And if it's a lot in Wisconsin, yeah, right, then that means the bar across the country is even lower. So we can with confidence tell people who probably think that this is not effective, that Wisconsin felt like it was pressure when it was at this number. And we had only been doing, how long have we been doing this for?
The advocacy initiative? 1 month now. 1 month.
We've been doing it for 1 month. We've been doing it for 1 month, and it's a few hundred people only for a month, and Wisconsin's feeling the pressure. You can't tell me we're not making a difference. That's change. That's real change.
Totally. And it's hard to do like updates. And so I'm going to try to do once a week with Daniel a podcast that has an update in all of the states where we're pushing. But I'm seeing it on a daily basis. There is movement in state after state on opening up to absentee balloting and introducing more early voting. It's almost all happening right now for the primaries because they're coming up next. Mm-hmm. Our eyes on the prize are on the fall, but the primaries have to come chronologically first. And so if we have success there, and we are, it makes success in the fall much, much more likely. It is happening. It is working.
Yeah. If the voters are get used to it, the primary, and these states don't offer it in the fall again, they're going to go, wait, what? You guys have already shown that we can do this. Why can't we do it in the fall? And that's on both sides.
Totally. Totally. I love like the idea of somebody, like I know that there is the social night. Let me kind of digress a little bit. There's a body of research in communication that deals with politeness, norms of politeness, and the ways in which communication is at the heart of politeness. Just the way that we just by default, we'll often say, oh, sorry, if we happen to run into somebody or something like that, right? Or like, or my bad, or something like that. There are these norms of politeness we have in our society. And so one of the norms of politeness is that there is this sense of we don't want to bother other people, okay? Yeah. We don't want to bother other people. And so this is a barrier for us socially to get over. It's part of the barrier we have to get over when we door knock. It's part of the barrier we have to get over when we do remote work. Because we take that norm of politeness, which we might really value in our own personal life. Like, don't bother me. I'm at home. Don't bother me. We have to get past that in order to do political work. You cannot do civic and political work without, quote unquote, bothering people. Okay. And you think about every movement for social change has, they've always had to bother people. John Lewis calls this good trouble. You have to get into good trouble, right?
That's exactly right. Yep.
And so this process of bothering people to me is the best, because then you get folks like in Wisconsin who write back and they're like, oh my God, it's another email from somebody who's who's right. And what's their response? Their response is they have to, like, we want them to feel exactly like that. Like, hey, the one way I remove this pressure is I do something about it.
Yeah, we want them to be bothered. That's
exactly
the goal, is for them to be bothered. And I think that the social norms that you're talking about around politeness, I think that's fine if, like, you want your neighbor to move their garbage can out of your driveway or something. You want the so-and-so's kid to quiet down or something like that. That's fine. We're talking about voting. We're talking about people having the ability to have their voice heard in their state about issues that are life-threatening possibly and, are about the conditions of their lives. You better be able to bother somebody for that. The stakes are very, very different. And so, that's, and people have found that. People have found that. You had somebody in your team specifically in Kentucky that pushed past that barrier. Somebody, you tell a story about how somebody didn't want to canvass, right?
Yep. Yeah, and they and I respect that. We're not here to like really force you to do it. So because we say, like, there, especially now, there's other ways you can do that. You can write a letter if you want. Okay, that's fine. But this person themselves said, well, I'm going to go out again today and I'll try it again for a second day. And by the time we were there for the fourth day, she's like, I think I would do this again. I don't love it, but I have gotten more comfortable with it, and I know how important it is. And if that's when we move through the social norms, that's when we're willing to break the discomfort that we have with social norms, is when we're willing to say, this thing that I'm trying to do is more important. Okay, it is.
That's right. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, I'm fired up this morning, man. This is good. Hey, this is a great episode.
Hey, man, it's good to talk to you. You've been like, I think you went out of town last weekend or something.
No, man, you just, you've got all these people that you want to work with and stuff. It's fine. You know, I'll just be over here hanging out doing my thing. It's cool.
You know, I've a number of people I've taught how to get onto into the Podbean episcast to make podcasts. I got another one this afternoon. It's like, I'm totally, you know, you can see this. I'm totally leaning into my identity as like a tech tutor now. Okay.
It is, I told somebody, this person is my wife. I told somebody that we were watching the Last Dance, which we are not going to talk about right now. Okay. We got to end this.
Got it.
It's the Michael Jordan documentary. We were watching that. And I said, David Domke is the Michael Jordan of civic engagement. Okay. And there's a lot in there. But it's not all the other pieces. It's not about all the other pieces. What it's about is like one of the compelling commentaries about Michael Jordan is that he's like, he works harder than everybody else and he works longer than everybody else. And he wasn't the best at it when he started. He wasn't.
Mm,
huh, but he outworked everybody, right? And he's got all these like physical things and stuff too, but like he worked harder also. So, you know, you learning podcasting and becoming the subject matter expert of a podcasting app and teaching a bunch of millennials how to use it has nothing to do with technology, actually. It has everything to do with civic engagement and it being a tool that you needed to master to be able to communicate your message in this moment. And it's for you. It's just, it's, if it would have been, relearning how to use a giant chalkboard, you would have like figured out how to do that. It's not about the technology, man. It's about the work and it's about your commitment to it. That's what it is.
Oh man, I think that's really kind. I appreciate that. We'll unpack The Last Dance the next time. All right?
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, man. Let's get back to work.
All right, man. Let's get back to work.
Perfect, because I'm losing you.